It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Menopause marks the end of reproductive years. A new Mayo Clinic study finds the symptoms associated with menopause come at a cost for women in the workplace. Join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Jewel Kling is chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, co-author of the study on menopause with more than 4,000 participants at four Mayo Clinic sites in Minnesota, Arizona, Florida, and Wisconsin. Dr. Kling, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, lay it out for us, your study revealing a big economic cost to women in menopause. What did you find?
Yeah, so we looked at over 4,000 women at those four different Mayo Clinic sites and asked them about their menopause symptoms, as well as if those menopause symptoms impacted their work environment, and found that 13% of the women we surveyed experienced at least one adverse work outcome related to menopause symptoms, and about 11% were missing days of work because of these symptoms. So when we extrapolated those numbers, looking at, you know, national statistics, that would estimate about an annual economic impact of about $1.8 billion in lost workdays. So certainly a profound impact.
What does it mean for the economy then when you put that $1.8 billion into context about what companies feel and when working women cut back on hours or leave the labor market due to menopause?
Yeah, I think this is demonstrating that there is a potential negative consequence to the economy. And it's an area that maybe we haven't really talked about very much in the past, although I suspect many of the women listening will be like, yep, I understand that, right? Because menopause is a universal experience. All women will go through menopause, average age is around 52, and most will have symptoms of menopause. And without policy or support in the workplace, that means some women have to make a tough decision about taking care of themselves versus, you know, sticking it out.
As you mentioned, you surveyed more than 4,000 people. The majority were white, educated, married, and you mentioned the word universal. Is menopause a universal experience?
Well, going through menopause is a universal experience, meaning every woman will go through menopause, which is the cessation of your menstrual cycles. It occurs 12 months after your last menstrual cycle. Perimenopause is any period before that time. Now, the symptoms of menopause, though, will look different for different women. Many will have hot flashes and night sweats. Many will have sleep disturbance. Some will have cognitive complaints, palpitations, sexual dysfunction like vaginal dryness. And we do see some racial and ethnic differences in those symptoms. So, for example, Black and Hispanic women tend to have more symptoms that last for a longer period of time.
I wonder what sets your study apart, because other studies have explored the effects of different types of these systems that you just, of the symptoms that you just listed. What is different about your study?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. I think a couple of things to our knowledge, this is the largest study that have looked at this relationship between menopause symptoms and adverse work outcomes. And really that latter part is investigating how menopause impacts women in the workplace is something that's been done in some studies, but not to this extent. And I'm hopeful that just like we're having this conversation today, this encourages, you know, both women, clinicians, but also workplaces to think about how they can best support their women in their workplace.
Dr. Jewel Kling with us, chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Arizona, a certified menopause practitioner. As we talk about a new study on menopause, Dr. Kling, a co-author on that. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Kling, let's turn to workplaces and how can conditions in the workplace improve to better accommodate people going through this phase in life?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I don't know if I have the final answer. I think this is something that really we need to step back and take a look at because menopause is a natural occurrence. So we don't want to make this a pathology for women or call women out. We want to be supportive in a way that allows them to continue to work at the top of their scope. You know, and it may look different for each workplace. For example, in a place that maybe has restrictions on the type of clothing you can wear in that workplace or access to a fan. You know, those workplaces may want to look at giving women that are experiencing hot flashes and night sweats access to tools that'll help with their symptoms.
What about fans? Because that perhaps changed at some workplaces during the pandemic, and there are certainly temperature settings at workplaces. Go into that further.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, during COVID, we were very cautious about air movement and things like that because of concern for spreading the infection. And so, in many places, you know, especially healthcare institutions, those were limited, which could have a negative impact on women. You know, simple remedies may be just setting the temperature within that clinic at a different, you know, temperature, although it gets challenging because you're trying to accommodate everybody. So certainly this isn't going to be straightforward, but it's important.
I wonder, do you see other countries leading the way on this, creating more menopause-friendly workplaces?
The conversation about menopause in the workplace is definitely something that's being had across the world. You know, last year we had our International Menopause Society meeting in Portugal, and this was a popular topic. There are some countries that are looking at policies such as the UK and attempting to implement things that would support women.
Do you think could changes in government policy, could that help improve workplaces and better support people going through menopause?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Talking with Dr. Jewel Kling, a Mayo Clinic internist, co-author of a study on the economic toll of menopausal symptoms. Join in with your comments, your questions, your experiences. They're welcome here. 800-642-1234, the number to call in. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We examine the physical, the economic, the social challenges of women encountering menopause in a new Mayo Clinic study with thousands of participants, including from here in Wisconsin. Call in with a question, a comment. The number to join in the discussion is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Jewel Kling is here, chairs the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, and is a study co-author. Dr. Kling, your study estimating 1% of participants have such debilitating symptoms they either quit their work or are laid off within 6 months. What are some examples of these symptoms?
Yeah, and gosh, just even hearing you say that, reflecting on the magnitude that menopause can have on women is significant. So thanks for asking about that. You know, the most common symptoms that women experience during menopause include hot flashes and night sweats. About 80% of women will experience hot flashes and night sweats during their menopause transition. But there's many other symptoms that women may experience, including sleep issues, cognitive complaints, joint pain symptoms, vaginal dryness, and sexual dysfunction. And sometimes you'll just have one of those symptoms, like, for example, palpitations. And so it's important for women to know that and to kind of anticipate what time that will happen, meaning what age. You know, the average age of menopause is around 52 years of age, but women start going through perimenopause in their mid-40s and sometimes earlier. So if they're experiencing those symptoms, making sure that they're going and seeking care and talking to their clinician. And then hopefully clinicians are aware, you know, that of these symptoms as well as the treatments that are available to help women through menopause.
A common misconception is that weight gain is a symptom of menopause. Why is that a myth?
Yeah, well, weight gain tends to occur around midlife, around the time of menopause. And so, you know, many women are going through menopause or experiencing symptoms of menopause and simultaneously experiencing weight gain. And so attribute it to menopause. But it looks like the weight gain is more an aging phenomenon. Our metabolism, unfortunately, just kind of grinds to a halt around that time of life. And so it really falls to women to make some changes, calorie restriction, more exercise, to attempt to combat the weight gain. Because the good news is, you know, if they can stabilize weight or even work on some weight loss, that can improve their menopausal symptoms.
And what about that weight gain in the belly, like right in that midsection? Is that just part of the aging, or is that at all associated with menopause?
Okay, that's such a great question. And that's a question that I get from almost every single one of my menopause patients. The abdominal weight gain is a phenomenon related to menopause. So as your hormones change in menopause, our body distribution changes, meaning instead of gaining weight more in a pear shape, we tend to gain more weight abdominally. So unfortunately, that is one of the consequences of menopause. A lot of women will ask me, hey, Dr. Kling, will hormones or treatment for my menopause improve those symptoms? And, you know, the short story is hormone therapy is weight neutral. It's not a weight loss drug, so you won't lose weight, you won't gain weight, but it may help with some of that abdominal weight gain.
We're going to talk about those hormone therapies in a moment, but I want to turn to the brain. How does our brain change during menopause?
Well, our body, our brains are changing, especially as we get older. But what women experience is a lot of cognitive complaints during the menopause transition, you know, and that may be related to secondary things like the hot flashes or the night sweats or the sleep issues. But what I hear from women is they'll tell me, gosh, Dr. Kling, I just feel like I'm in a cognitive fog. I'm fatigued, or I can't remember things. I'll walk into a room and I know I was going there to get something, and you just forget. And what we see in research is, you know, clinical studies have shown that some of those cognitive complaints, we can see them in, you know, objective studies. The good news is after the menopause transition, that improves.
Is there a particular type of test, like a blood test you can take to see where you're at, whether you are going through menopause?
Yeah, that's also an excellent question. And menopause is diagnosed clinically, meaning we use your menstrual cycle to determine where you are in the menopause transition. It's defined retrospectively as 12 months past your last menstrual cycle. Now, there may be some listeners that are listening and say, hey, I had a hysterectomy. I don't have a menstrual cycle, or I had an ablation. You know, for those women, we'd probably look at their age and their symptoms. But if there was a concern, we can always check some hormone levels and estradiol, a hormone from the brain called follicle stimulating hormone that can also cue us in to see if it is menopause.
Another aspect of the cognitive issues and the brain fog, that can have implications in the workplace. Like you're giving a presentation and you just can't find the right word, or that word is like on the tip of your tongue, but it's just not coming out. Have you heard that from the participants?
That's an excellent point. And yeah, I suspect that symptom of menopause is one of the things that may influence women negatively in the workplace.
We're talking about menopause with Dr. Jewel Kling, chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, certified menopause practitioner, and fielding your questions about this stage in life. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Kling, other symptoms of menopause include vaginal dryness, diminished sexual drive, and pain during sex. How can sex change after menopause?
Yeah, oftentimes it does because of those symptoms that you listed. The vulva and the vagina change, the cells change, and it leads to less lubrication, which can cause dryness and pain with intercourse. Those changes can also cause urinary urgency, as well as increase your risk of urinary tract infections. Now, Now, the good news is there are safe, effective treatments that are local and will treat those symptoms specifically. And so, if women are experiencing those symptoms, I'd encourage them to seek treatment.
Are those changes permanent?
The changes to the vulva and the vagina are, yes, unless you start either a low-dose vaginal estrogen, there's also vaginal DHEA or an oral medication called espemifene that can address those changes and help the symptoms.
Let's turn to hormone therapy. One of the government-approved FDA treatments for relief of menopausal symptoms. The amount of people taking hormone therapy for menopause has fallen over time. What's going on there?
Yeah, it certainly has. Well, there's a long kind of checkered history with our understanding of the safety of hormone therapy. You know, before the 1990s, many physicians were starting women on hormones thinking that it was protective against heart disease. And then the Women's Health Initiative was put together, the largest randomized control study to look at the effects of hormone therapy on women. And in 2002, it was closed early because they found increased rates of heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer. And that really shocked everybody because they thought it would improve those outcomes. But it turns out that the average age of women enrolled in the Women's Health Initiative was 63 years of age. You know, the average age of menopause in the US is 52. So many of these women were more than 10 years from their last menstrual cycle. And what we found is support of something called the timing hypothesis, that the risks associated with hormone therapy have to do with timing of initiation. And there have been studies since that time. And now our most recent North American Menopause Society position statement says that for women less than age 60 or within 10 years from their last menstrual cycle, that typically the benefits of hormone therapy are going to outweigh the risks for treating symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats, as well as for preventing osteoporosis.
And over age 60, why is there why is that age 60 important here as you look at menopausal hormone therapy?
Yeah, it's important because older women starting on hormone therapy, that hormone therapy can increase their risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke.
Okay, and so the FDA approved treatment for hot flashes and night sweats associated with menopause. Are there side effects to this type of medication?
Well, we always talk about risks and benefits as it relates to medications and for hormone therapy. We want to look at things like risk of blood clot and breast cancer, but those risks are low. Really, it's making sure there's no contraindications, meaning that women don't have underlying diagnoses like breast cancer or heart attack that would preclude them from using hormone therapy. Beyond that,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say that beyond that, you know, sometimes when we're starting hormone therapy, women may notice breast tenderness, sometimes vaginal bleeding, but those symptoms tend to go away, and we can adjust the dosages to make sure that they're not having those symptoms.
Are there barriers in healthcare that exist for women looking to relieve symptoms of menopause and access to these medications?
Wow. Where do we start with that question? Yes, there are certainly barriers. I think in part because of this kind of evolving history of the understanding of the safety of hormone therapy, which means many clinicians just shy away from using hormones or not familiar with the updated guidelines. And so women may find when they go in to talk to their doctors or their advanced practitioners that they're not offered treatments because of concern for risks that just aren't founded based on what we know now. And then women not having the opportunity to really know that their symptoms are related to menopause. It wasn't until recently that we're having these discussions that I'm so grateful that you're carving out this space so we can call this out because menopause impacts so many women. And so, you know, certainly lack of access. As I mentioned earlier, you know, Black and Hispanic women tend to have more symptoms. Underserved women tend to have more symptoms. And if they can't access care, then they're not going to get treatment. So lots of barriers to overcome, but I'm hopeful because we're having these dialogues and discussions that we're going to move forward and get more women the care that they need.
It certainly also begs the question of what happens to so many women who don't have the ability or the privilege to choose to cut back on work or be able to leave the workforce when they are having such major symptoms from menopause. And something I want to get into here a little bit further as we look at this Mayo Clinic study and internal medicine physician Jewel Kling with us focusing on improving care related to menopause, co-author of a new study on the economic impact of menopausal symptoms of women in the workforce. Your thoughts, your comments, they're welcome at any point. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The study authors say it could be the largest study to date examining the impact of menopause symptoms on work outcomes, compounding lost productivity and health expenses. We explore this new Mayo Clinic study with your questions along the way. Call in with what you want to share, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Study co-author Dr. Jewel Kling is chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. Let's take a call. Margie in Milwaukee. Hi, Margie.
Hi there. I'm calling with one comment and then an observation. I didn't suffer from hot flashes, but I've had years of severe low back pain. And I would take, you know, the insulated lunch boxes, and I still keep one in the car when I'm traveling, and I keep ice packs in it. And so, like, when I'm driving or when I'm sitting at a desk, I can either sit on an ice pack or put one behind my back, and it fairly quickly cools me down and numbs that back pain. I would think it could help with hot flashes with some women in the workplace. It wouldn't always be appropriate, but that might be one aid that could help. And my other observation is that when I was working, I'm retired now, I was being diagnosed in my early 50s with ADD, the inattentive type. And I know it was compounded during menopause, and I did end up losing a job because of my difficulty being able to focus and stay organized. It was it was extremely difficult time.
Thank you so much for sharing and calling in. Dr. Kling, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Margie, for sharing your experience. And I'm sorry that that happened to you. But gosh, it sounds like you're such a resilient person and so creative with the ice packs. And I think your comment is probably what a lot of women are doing, is they're making do with what they can to be able to, you know, make it with those symptoms in the workplace. And oftentimes, you know, women fear bias, discrimination, and stigmatization, and therefore may be reluctant to disclose their menopause symptoms to their workplace managers and others. So do creative things like Marjorie's doing. I think what our study is calling out is that it's time for the workplace to look at how they can proactively create a space and support women in other ways.
Are their symptoms connected to severe lower back pain or ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder?
We definitely see joint pain symptoms can be associated with menopause. Low back pain, I would certainly, and it sounds like Margie probably did this, you know, had an evaluation by her doctor to take a look and make sure what was going on. But you know, the menopause transition is a time of vulnerability, and if you're having, you know, multiple hot flashes and night sweats a day, if you're not sleeping well, it's absolutely going to exacerbate other symptoms. In fact, we do see women, especially women that have other mood disorders like a history of depression, postpartum depression, those type of things, they're at higher risk for experiencing those symptoms during the menopause transition. So certainly something to watch for.
Margie, thank you for the call. Let's go to Paula in La Crosse. Paula, what would you like to bring up?
Well, I just wanted to comment that exercise piece of it that the doctor was talking about to help, you know, the natural process of weakening as we age. And I have found I'm 60, and I started probably in my early 50s with menopause. But what I also started doing, and I think it's so important, is strength training. You know, us women are just born with not muscle, not as much. And so along with that, you know, obviously aerobic activity, I just think it's so important for a woman as we age to hopefully get some strength training in. I think the general recommendation might be 2 to 3 times a week, but I think as we age and menopause, it's just so important.
Thank you, Paula. Dr. Kling, can you elaborate on strength training regimens?
Yeah, Paula, thank you so much for bringing that up because that is so important. One of the things we haven't talked about a lot during this time is the risk of osteoporosis, which we see goes up postmenopausally. So strength training, weight-bearing exercise is so important to keeping your bones strong to prevent osteoporosis and future fracture, but it also just keeps you strong and able so that, you know, in 20, 30 years, you're not at a higher risk of falls or other things. So I'm so glad that you brought that up and absolutely encourage women to include some amount of strength training in their regular exercise routine.
Do you need to do more of it when you look at this midlife weight gain and the weight gain around the midsection? Should you be adding to that exercise routine each week?
Yeah, certainly it could be something that could be considered. However, when we look at the goal of weight loss, while exercise is so important for so many things, likely the most important area for weight loss is going to be calorie restriction. So, looking at the diet and cutting back on calories.
Dr. Jewel Kling with us, chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, certified menopause practitioner, fielding your questions and explaining their new menopause symptom study, its impact on the workplace. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Kling, turning back to the study, there was a recent study from the National Library of Medicine showing Black women experience symptomatic differences before, during, and after menopause. How so?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up. What we see in research is that both Latinas and non-Latina Black women experience more frequent hot flashes and night sweats, as well as more sleep disturbance and depression. For Black women, those symptoms may last longer, on the length of 10 years or so. So certainly highlights an opportunity for improving symptom treatment for these women.
How are symptoms and treatments for menopause different for people who are already taking hormone therapy, like trans men or, you know, some non-binary people?
That is a great question. And like many things as it relates to how we care for our transgender non-binary patients, this is really a data-free zone. So we don't have a lot of guidance to know how to care for our patients that are on gender-affirming hormone therapy. But recognizing that the challenge may be continuing, you know, to support their gender affirmation goals while, you know, looking at other treatments. In that case, you may turn to a non-hormone option if they're having hot flashes and night sweats so that you're not, you know, interrupting that gender affirmation treatment. And thankfully, you know, we have some good options, including now just our second FDA-approved treatment for hot flashes and night sweats that's not a hormone.
What is happening with these non-hormonal treatments? I think it's Veozah, perhaps, that's targeting, I think, a neuron in the brain.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's a novel technology, a novel treatment. It's called fezolinetant. It's a neurokinin B antagonist. So basically, it's looking at treating the root of where hot flashes and night sweats generate. You know, we all have a thermoregulatory zone in our brain, which is basically like a thermostat in your brain. And this medication is going to go there and stop the root of what causes hot flashes and night sweats.
How can physicians be more inclusive when treating their patients with menopausal symptoms, especially people of color or trans men and non-binary people? What would you tell physicians?
Yeah, I think, you know, taking care of all patients equitably, listening to our patients when they bring a symptom, really validating those symptoms and thinking about menopause as a potential cause. Really, when we look at the amount of education that medical students and residents have as it relates to menopause, it's fairly limited. In fact, we did a study some years ago looking at residents in family medicine, OB-GYN, and internal medicine, and it was pretty surprising to see how limited their education is as it relates to menopause. And so I would hope more information gets out there so clinicians understand those symptoms of menopause and can validate when women are sitting in front of them or, you know, trans folks or non-binary folks and sharing their symptoms to think of menopause as a potential cause.
Dr. Jewel Kling with us of the Mayo Clinic, co-author of the study that totals up the missed workdays and the economic toll of managing menopausal symptoms as we go deeper into what those symptoms are and their implications. You can join in with a question. You can share a comment. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The years-long stretch of time that comes after the end of a woman's reproductive years, menopause, is costing American employers about $1.8 billion as employees manage the symptoms like hot flashes and fatigue and brain fog that we've been talking about. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Jewel Kling is chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, co-author of this study on the economic burden of menopause. Let's bring in Nancy in Milwaukee. Nancy, what would you like to share?
I am wondering what the doctor's opinion would be about the advisability of having a reclassed drip to prevent or at least help with osteoporosis before menopause actually occurs. This is would cost me $1,000, and which is not covered by Medicare. And I am wondering whether these drugs really are that helpful in preventing the osteoclast sequence. And therefore, or is it actually it's the same drug, but they're just better, they're made better because they have lesser side effects. This is a very important and very expensive drugs mm-hmm. for people, and I would like to have their opinion, please.
Nancy, thank you so much. Dr. Kling.
Yeah, Nancy, thank you for bringing this up. You're highlighting such an important point, focusing on both osteoporosis prevention and treatment, which, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, women are at our higher risk of osteoporosis postmenopausally. For women that are having menopausal symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats and fit within that age category, less than age 60, within 10 years from their last menstrual cycle, and are concerned about osteoporosis either because they have a family history or they had some other risk factor that puts them at a higher risk, they could consider starting hormone therapy to prevent osteoporosis. However, based on our menopause guidelines, we don't recommend hormone therapy to treat osteoporosis. So for women, perhaps like yourself, Nancy, that have been diagnosed with osteoporosis or are at an elevated risk of fracture, medications like zoledronic acid, which is reclassed, can be considered. That's a bisphosphonate medication, and they're very effective for helping prevent fractures related to osteoporosis.
we haven't really talked much about postmenopausally. Nancy brings it up here with osteoporosis, but do some of the symptoms of menopause subside?
Oh, the good news is yes, for most women.
Dr. Kling, can you still hear us? We're having a little bit of an outage with your audio. I think we're trying to get Dr. Jewel Kling back here, chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, as we learn about the symptoms of menopause and how to address it, especially in the workforce, and sharing what you wonder, sharing your experiences as well. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And as we talk about the symptoms that come with menopause, this is certainly a new study from the Mayo Clinic that puts a price tag on menopause in the workforce. And you can find a link to the study at WPR.org/mornings. Dr. Kling is a co-author of a study on menopause. It had more than 4,000 participants at 4 Mayo Clinic sites. Dr. Kling, are you back with us?
Yes. Yeah, so sorry about that. We're just talking about the good news of hot flashes and night sweats ending, and then my call ended. That was kind of ironic, wasn't it?
That was indeed. But if you could just pick up there about postmenopausally and what to expect.
Yeah. And it's a great question. You know, the menopause transition, we used to think lasted maybe 2 to 3 years, but more recent data suggests that it's on average about 7 to 10 years that women may have symptoms of menopause, which means for a majority, once that transition is over, they'll stop having hot flashes and night sweats and other symptoms. That's the good news. There is about a quarter of women that will continue to have symptoms well into their 60s and 70s. That's another area where perhaps non-hormone medications may be a good option for them.
Let's look at the other spectrum, perimenopause, beginning between perhaps ages 45 and 55, according to the National Institute on Aging. What should we know about the years before menopause hits and the transition to menopause?
I think probably the first thing is to acknowledge that it's going to come, right? So most women round their 30s, get into their 40s, if they've done childbearing, their kids are a little bit older, you know, and then just it starts. And oftentimes it may start with changes to the menstrual cycle, heavier periods, lighter periods, but it may also be hot flashes, night sweats, or just some sleep disturbance. So recognizing once you get to your 40s, especially your mid-40s, those symptoms may be a symptom of menopause or perimenopause rather. And there's lots of tools that can be helpful for women that find those symptoms distressing. One point I'll say, just so women know, because I think many of us consider once we're in our mid to late 40s that our chance of getting pregnant is pretty low, but you can technically get pregnant up until 12 months past the last menstrual cycle. So if women are not interested in getting pregnant, using something like a birth control pill to treat their symptoms can also provide contraception.
What about early onset of menopause? Is that any indication of a shortened life?
Early menopause, which is less than age 45, or premature menopause, which is less than 40, are really important conditions. And women that are experiencing these do need to see their doctor to make sure that they get evaluated, especially those that prematurely go through menopause, both to make sure there's not an underlying condition. And for those women, they should be on hormone replacement therapy until the average age of menopause, which again is about 51 or 52 in the U.S., because if they're not, they do have a higher chance of long-term health consequences like heart disease, Parkinsonism, dementia, sexual dysfunction, osteoporosis. But the good news is if they get on hormone replacement therapy, many of those risk factors will be mitigated or reduced.
We have an email coming in from Dorothy, who is saying the cost of these HRT drugs and difficulty getting physicians to prescribe anything except topical estrogen really hasn't worked for Dorothy, and it is getting very frustrating. Do you have any insights there?
Dorothy, I hear you, and I know it's a struggle for many. Maybe two parts to this is first identifying a practitioner who's familiar with menopause and treatments, which can be done actually through the North American Menopause Society website, where certified menopause practitioners kind of post there, and we have a database where women can search for people locally. The other thing is working with their physician or their advanced practitioner to find a hormone therapy option that's affordable. Now, many of the bioidentical FDA-approved treatments are covered by insurance companies. And so if they are able to get a prescription, they can get that covered. And then there's certain pharmacies that may be able to cover it at lower costs. A lot of my patients will use things like GoodRx or Amazon Pharmacy or things like this that may provide more affordable options for their hormone therapy.
And concerning topical treatments, what breakthroughs do you see there?
Yeah, I wonder if Nancy's talking either about custom compounded treatments, which we'll use sometimes, but because we have great FDA-approved bioidentical hormones, really the recommendations from our societies is to use the FDA-approved. But there are topical treatments for the vaginal dryness. So most of the treatments to treat what's called the genitourinary syndrome of menopause are topical and vaginal, either a cream, a tablet, a capsule, or a ring.
Kelly in La Crosse emailed to say that they've gone through menopause and experienced their sexual response extremely diminished. And they say they're still mentally very interested and attracted to their partner, but their body response is way less. Is there anything that can be done to address this?
Yeah, and that is unfortunately a common symptom that many women experience during menopause. And the short answer is yes, there are options for treatment. Many times treating other menopausal symptoms, so starting on hormone therapy, the estrogen itself can help with some of that responsiveness. For women that have a low libido that's not caused by other things, which we call hypoactive sexual desire disorder, there are some FDA-approved treatments if you're premenopausal. And for postmenopausal women, there's some guidelines for topical testosterone.
We don't have much time left here, but where should the research on menopause go next? Where is it most needed?
I think it's needed everywhere, right? Menopause has so little research, and really investigating things like how can we predict menopause? You know, why is the experience different in different women? What are the best treatments and what are those outcomes? You know, we have a good foundation of research, but really I think women deserve more.
There's a lot more to uncover, a lot more for your research to uncover as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And our teams here at Mayo Clinic are dedicated to making sure that we're leading the way and innovating when it comes to menopause research.
Dr. Kling, thank you for this conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me and for featuring this really important topic.
Dr. Jewel Kling is chair of the Women's Health Internal Medicine Division at Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, co-author of the study on menopause with more than 4,000 participants at four Mayo Clinic sites, including here in Wisconsin. You can find a link to the study at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.